So reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 30, text number 42. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, yes, I already said that. For those of you out there in computer land, you might notice a little bit of noise. It's coming from the roof. It's unavoidable. It's for good purpose, good cause. They're fixing the roof. So thank you for your tolerance. Tato Vishan Vanam Chandra Jyotsna Yavad Vibhavyate Tama Pravishtam Alakshya Tato Nirvartu Striyaha Tato Vishan Vanam Chandra Jyotsna Yavad Vibhavyate Tama Pravishtam Alakshya Tato Nivartru, no, Tato Nivavritu Striyaha, Tato Vishan Vanam Chandra, Jyotsna Yavad Vibhavyate, Tamat Pravishtam Alakshya. Tato Nivavritu Nivavritu Striyaha.
Tato Nivavritu Striyaha.
Chant.
Tato Vishandanam Chandra. Tato Vishandanam Chandra. Yosna Yavavivavate. Yosna Yavavivavate. Tama Pravishtam Alakshya. Tama Pravishtam Alakshya.
Energy. Tataha, then, Avisan, they entered, Vanam, the forest, Chandra, of the moon, Jyotsna, the light, Yavat, as far, Vibhavyate, as was visible. Tamaha, darkness. Pravishtam, entered. Alakshya, noticing. Tataha, thereupon. Nivavritu, they desisted. Striyaha, the women. So we're almost done with the chapter entitled The Gopi's Search for Krishna. So I'll read the next few verses that will conclude the chapter. In search of Krishna, the gopis then entered the depths of the forest as far as the light of the moon shone. But when they found themselves engulfed in darkness, they decided to turn back. Report. The gopis entered a part of the forest so dense that even the light of the full moon couldn't penetrate it. This scene is also described in the Vishnu Purana. So this is the verse that describes the scene. Pravishto gahanam Krishna padam atra nalakshyate nirvartad van shashankasya naitad di diti gocharaha. One gopi said, Krishna has entered such a dark part of the forest that we cannot possibly see his footprints. Therefore, let us turn back from this area, which even the light of the moon could not reach. Text 43. Their minds absorbed in thoughts of him, they conversed about him, acted out his pastimes, and felt themselves filled with his presence. They completely forgot about their homes as they loudly sang the glories of Krishna's transcendental qualities. Purport. Actually, there is no separation from Krishna for the pure devotees of the Lord. Although apparently abandoned by Krishna, the gopis were actually tightly connected to him by the spiritual process of Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. And then the final verse. The gopis again came to the bank of the Kalindi, meditating on Krishna and eagerly hoping he would come. They sat down together to sing of him. Purport. As stated in the Katha Upanishad 1.2.23, Yam evaisha virnute tena labhya. The supersoul can be realized by that person whom he chooses. Thus the gopis fervently pray that Krishna come back to them. Yanatimrandasya Giranjana Salakya Chakshun Militam Dhyena Tasme Shri Gurve Namaha Vanchakalpatrubhyas Chakripasindhubhya Vachapatitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So there's a very beautiful pastime because it shows how much the gopis love Krishna. And we aspire to develop that same love, not by imitating the gopis, but by trying to follow in their footsteps, which means, of course, they're automatically thinking of Krishna. They're at the point where, and many of them always have been, at the point where they always thought of Krishna spontaneously. Just as we might think of Maya spontaneously, they think of Krishna spontaneously, just like that prayer. It was on the back of the Nectar Devotion. Just like young boys are attracted to young girls, I pray that my attraction to you, O Lord, develops in the same spontaneous way. So very often that comparison is given. We're naturally attracted to Maya. Pure devotees naturally attracted to Krishna. So it's beautiful to see the way the gopis spend 24 hours a day. Either they're with Krishna and they're chanting his glories, or they're not with Krishna and they're chanting his glories. And when they're not with Krishna chanting his glories, they're with Krishna. And that's the point being made here. Actually, there is no separation from Krishna for the pure devotees of the Lord. Just like Prabhupada said, although he only was physically with his spiritual master a handful of times, maybe 10 or 11 times, he said, I never felt that I was separated from my spiritual master. Same principle. Always absorbed in thoughts and always engaged in his service. So we can think of Krishna. That's one aspect of serving Krishna. At the same time, Krishna will be more present for us if we also act in Krishna's service. That's when the realization comes. The vani is so important for us. Our whole lives are based on the vani of the spiritual master. Krishna has, or Prabhupada, has captured our hearts. He's stolen our hearts, just like Krishna has stolen their hearts. In other words, their hearts belong to Krishna. They can't do anything about it. And for a devotee in the Hare Krishna movement, Prabhupada has stolen our hearts. What does that mean? The heart desires, the heart longs, the heart feels. So our desire has become, to one degree or another, the desire of Srila Prabhupada. Our life has become Prabhupada's life. And we don't have a separate existence from that of Prabhupada or our spiritual master representative of Prabhupada. That's the ideal state of existence. And that means we're always connected in terms of our thoughts and in terms of our service. There was a very nice verse I thought of when I was reading this. It's actually a verse that I like to think of a lot, where Narada Muni is describing to Vyasadeva his history, his story. And he's describing his inner mood, his inner feelings, his pastimes. And I always refer to this one verse that's in the first canto, in the sixth chapter. And then today I looked at it again. I wanted to see the Sanskrit, and I also wanted to see what Prabhupada said in the purport, because it's been a while since I referenced the verse. And then I also referenced the verse before that, which I don't remember reading. I'm sure I read it on a number of occasions, but it's really nice in connection with the following verse, and especially in relationship to the purport that we're reading now, because Narada Muni is saying the same thing. He's saying, speaking to Vyasadeva, he's saying, the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna, whose glories and activities are pleasing to hear, at once appears on the seat of my heart as if called for, as soon as I begin to chant his holy activities. The Supreme Lord Krishna, whose glories and activities are pleasing to hear, at once appears on the seat of my heart as if called for, as soon as I begin to chant his holy activities. And then Prabhupada explains, how Krishna is non-different from his name, his form, his pastimes, etc., and the sound vibrations thereof. He says that as soon as a pure devotee engages himself in the pure devotional service of hearing, chanting, and remembering the name, fame, and activities of the Lord, at once he becomes visible to the transcendental eyes of the pure devotees. By reflecting himself on the mirror of the heart by spiritual television. That's what it says. I didn't make that up. As soon as a pure devotee engages himself in the pure devotional service of hearing, chanting, remembering the name, fame, and activities of the Lord, at once he becomes visible to the transcendental eyes of the pure devotee by reflecting himself on the mirror of the heart by spiritual television. Therefore, a pure devotee who is related with the Lord in loving transcendental service can experience the presence of the Lord at every moment. So that's the gopis are on one hand looking for Krishna, but they found Krishna. And we can also find Krishna in the same way. And then Narada Muni says, and this is such a wonderful verse for us, "It is personally experienced by me that those who are always full of cares and anxieties due to desiring contact of the senses with their objects can cross the ocean of nescience on a most suitable boat. The constant chanting of the transcendental activities of the personality of Godhead." So he's saying that he's seeing that those who are always in anxiety due to their material desires, always wanting to have contact of the senses with their objects, can cross the ocean of nescience. What is the ocean of nescience? That very thing, desiring sense gratification. So he's saying, for those who desire sense gratification, can get out of their, they can get out of their illusion and all the anxiety that results from that. They can cross the ocean of nescience on the most suitable boat, the constant hearing and chanting of the transcendental activities of the personality of Godhead. So that's the, as we say in Spanish, la clave. That's the key for opening up the door to the real heart. One thing is we have to realize that this is nescience when we meditate like this. Now the gopis are meditating out of natural on Krishna out of natural attraction. We meditate on Krishna because we're in so much anxiety. Sometimes it's like that. I remember I was staying at the house of one devotee, and his children, they never chant. They never chant. One day the light, the electricity went out. They ran to their room, found their beads, and they started chanting. It was beautiful to hear. I didn't even know that they knew the mantra. They were chanting like anything because there was no electricity and they were scared. So we're like that to some degree. In times of misery, hopefully, we reflect deeply and we chant a little bit more earnestly. What to speak of what is going to happen at the time of death. And we become very, very sober. And I was thinking the other day, I was chanting, I was pretty tired because of my previous day's activities. I was pretty tired. It's hard to stay awake. My mind was saying, well, just go to sleep. Then I was thinking, well, at the time of death, it's going to be a lot more difficult than this, a lot more difficult than being a little tired. And you don't just give up and go to sleep. You try to really earnestly chant. So it's not that we should always be tired and tolerate it. We have to get enough sleep. But there are times when we're chanting, when we are tired. And a lot of that has to do with the lack of being enlivened in the mind or Yeah, we might be tired. But we also have duties to perform. And at times like that, it's nice to reflect on not just fulfilling the desires of the mind and the body, but to reflect in a more elevated way and chant more fervently, with more enthusiasm. Because we see so often that, yeah, people are tired, but if they're enthusiastic about what they're doing, they don't think about how tired they are. In fact, they become enlivened. Because a lot of our being tired, not all the time, in my case, well, it was probably some of both, but a lot of our being tired has to do with the mind being tired, being exhausted from accepting and rejecting and dealing with so many hankerings and lamentations and situations during the day. So if we could just cross over that bridge and try to fervently absorb ourselves in the holy name, hearing and chanting, then we can conquer over that very nicely and very easily. Prabhu, try not to use your phone during class. Okay. It's a dilemma now, because half the devotees send text messages, the other half are reading the Bhagavatam, taking notes. So I give up. Thank you. And what does it mean to be hearing and chanting too? We really have to concentrate, because if we don't, then the mind wanders. It's a constant endeavor. When we're chanting the holy name, for example, even in kirtan, which is easier, it's easier to absorb ourselves in one sense in kirtan because it's a group experience. We're singing, we're dancing, we're engaging the senses. Many devotees, when they chant their japa, they're chanting alone. And it's much more difficult. Devotees always ask that question. It's much easier to chant during kirtan. Why is that much easier? Is it much easier to chant during kirtan? Because we're together. And the music is there, and it's uplifting, etc., etc. But even then, our minds can be wandering. We're in front of the deities. The most auspicious situation we could possibly be in. By Prabhupada's mercy, we have a temple. We have deities. We're together. We're chanting the holy name. The roof is being fixed. What more can we ask for? So, but still, the mind wanders. And if we think about it, we can understand how strong the mind. What does the mind wander to? It wanders to things that have no relationship to reality, to our Krishna consciousness. The goal of life, the perfection of life, our meditation should be to glorify Krishna and devotional service. What to speak of when we're right in front of the deities? So much to glorify. But then the mind chooses to meditate on other things. Either it's hankering, lamenting, fault-finding, dealing with problems. It's just Maya's excuse to distract us, or Maya's attempt to distract us to so many things that have no basis in reality, no basis in, or no chance to actually help us. And we take these other thoughts to be so important, so valid. If the mind is not Krishna conscious, the mind will find fault with this material world. What does accepting and rejecting mean? Rejecting means you're finding fault with someone, so you're not hankering, or something, you're not hankering after it. And we can find fault all day long. And sometimes the mind does that. How difficult would it be to find 100 faults right now? In everybody that you know, every situation you're in, how difficult would it be? Be simple, right? Would anybody have any trouble writing 100 faults right now? Right. So that's what the mind is so accustomed to doing that, and we take them so seriously, even in front of the deities. I started thinking like that this morning, and then by Krishna's mercy, I caught myself. I was able to get a little bit absorbed. But the mind is like that. It takes it so seriously, like we have. Yes, we have to spend this time thinking about these things, all the things that are wrong with this world and everybody else. But what value is there? So that's an indication of how strong Maya is and how much more we have to become Krishna conscious and appreciate Krishna when he's right before us. And what's being explained here is that he's right before us in transcendental sound, in these descriptions. We just have to focus. We have to learn how to focus. Like the sages of Naimisharanya, they were listening with rapt attention. And Prabhupada points that out. We have to hear with rapt attention. And we can hear with rapt attention. It's possible. But we have to train ourselves. In that particular purport in the Bhagavatam, which I think about a lot, Prabhupada says we have to be, I forget the exact word, but pure or strict in our bodily activities of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Otherwise, the mind will be so much agitated. And in so many other ways we have to be strict in order to be able to hear with rapt attention. If we're not hearing with rapt attention, then we have to try to focus. It's the same with our chanting of the holy name during our japa. If we're not doing it, then we have to focus. We have to at least try. Sometimes you see devotees chanting with great enthusiasm, right? They're like, oh, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram, Ram. So that can mean two things. Either they're trying to control their minds, or it can mean so many things. But I know many devotees who chant like that when they're trying to control their minds. And it's very nice to see. It's enlivening. It's enlivening because they're trying. Sometimes the devotee will say, I don't have any difficulty chanting my rounds. What does that mean? Well, if it means that you're not really trying to concentrate, and for that reason you don't have any difficulty, then that's not good. Actually, we should all be having difficulty chanting our rounds because it's not easy to control the mind. And if we have the mental energy to do that, which we need to have, then that will benefit us so much. We're in a different situation than the gopis. They're just naturally on that platform. And as we were saying, when we're suffering, we can try to become more absorbed. We're enthused to become more absorbed. And when we're happy, we should also. Sometimes devotees are happy. They're free from anxiety. So the mind will think, well, now I can enjoy more because I'm not in so much anxiety. I can enjoy eating more. More eating, more sleeping, more mating, more defending. Hopefully not. Hopefully not more mating, at least. So when we're in a situation of being happy and peaceful, we should invest that happiness, that feeling good in Krishna consciousness, and do more service and do it better because we'll benefit so much from our hearing, our chanting, our association with the devotees. So that's a more advanced stage. So many people, for example, they don't come to spiritual life because they're happy in the material world. They're bewildered by it. Bhogaishvarya prasaktanam taya parita chetasa. If they're too bewildered by material opulence and sense gratification, they don't want to have anything to do with the austerities of Krishna consciousness. So it could be a problem. Could be a problem for us. Being happy and just like the demigods, it's a problem for them. It's a problem for people who are material. It's a problem to make devotees in Hawaii, they say. Because it's so heavenly there. So we could have the same problem. Material opulence, sense gratification, are that fervent desire, that necessity to meditate on Krishna by hearing and chanting and increasing our service like that. That desire could be diminished. We have to be very, very careful. As Prabhupada explains, one purport, that money and women, they have Many stalwarts have fallen from the devotional line because of that material opulence and sense gratification. So it could be very, very dangerous for us when we're in situations of material happiness. But if we invest our Krishna consciousness in that, utilize that state of being to increase our Krishna consciousness, then we'll be in a wonderful state of existence. So then we can also be tolerating not just distress, but tolerating happiness. And tolerating happiness, tolerating distress means not changing the intensity of our absorption in devotional service. So the gopis set a very wonderful example. They're always thinking about Krishna, whether Krishna is gone, whether Krishna is there, whatever situation they're in, they're thinking about Krishna. Questions, comments so far? Yes, Prabhu. It matters to the people who are listening. There are probably more people that are listening on computer than here we have. Here we have a new battery. Two new batteries. Okay, so the question, I'll repeat it if the mic doesn't work. Oh, here it goes. Just speak very like that.
You said that criticizing is useless, and sometimes we have devotees that...
Can you turn the mic up, Prabhu?
Sometimes I come in contact with some senior god
brothers. Like this. Speak like this.
That have been... they dedicated their whole lives to criticism. You know, they're still complaining about what decisions the GBC made in 35 years ago. And they just, you know, whenever they talk, whenever they get together, they're always talking about things that have been wrong, things...
How do you know?
Well, I come in contact with some of them, and then if I try to reason with them, they just get more upset, so I just have to avoid that association.
That's good.
I was wondering how... Sometimes we feel like we get on these campaigns, we feel like we have to fix something or there's something wrong. And is there a benefit, any way to channel that desire to make things better without just being criticizing?
Right, meditating on what you want, not what you don't want. And if you have to mention what you don't want, then don't be attached to the results. And don't be offensive in your communication. These are things that I've learned. I'm still learning. We have to understand that everyone has different points of view. Some are sincere, some aren't sincere. And we have to tolerate that. And we always have to feel affection for the devotees. Not that we have to associate with every devotee intimately, but we have to feel affection for the devotees. And we have to try to understand before being understood. And not be attached to the results, because we can't change everything at the same time. Endeavor to pursue what we feel were Prabhupada's desires. We're living in a big organization. There'll always be devotees on the left, always devotees on the right, and always devotees in the middle. Even in the temple, what to speak of a worldwide movement. The devotees who are conservative, the devotees who are liberal, and the devotees who are right in the middle. So we have to learn how to tolerate that. And we have to learn also how to segment our consciousness. If we find that during the Brahma Murta hour, we're meditating on these things rather than hearing and chanting, then we can understand there's a problem. There's a time and a place for everything. Just like Prabhupada, he would always be doing that so nicely. There are certain times of the day he involved himself in administration and management. Other times during the day he'd involve himself in preaching. Other times he'd be writing letters to the devotees. Other times during the day he'd be translating and chanting. So if we find that we're always thinking about these things, we should realize that there's a big problem there. Because these thoughts aren't going to get us back to Godhead. They're not going to benefit us spiritually. Now I'm talking about criticizing. But even trying to make things better, we understand that we have to start with ourselves and to have purity, clarity of vision, enthusiasm, strength. We get that from our sadhana. And that's what's needed to change things and to move things forward in a nice way. And that's why Prabhupada said to Ramaswara Prabhu, when he was talking about preaching in a particular area, I forget what, Prabhupada said, that's very nice. First, save yourself. But first, save yourself. So we can think about changing ISKCON, changing the world, changing everybody else. That's good. But we should think about changing ourselves first. Right? And there are devotees that I know that have been in the middle of very, very difficult circumstances. Very difficult. And you ask that devotee, very difficult inter-temple circumstances, inter-community circumstances. Ask the devotee how he is. Fine. Other devotees in the same circumstances, how are you? Horrible. And then they start complaining about everybody. So the devotee who's fine, is it that devotee is ignorant of all the problems? No, but he understood how to deal with the problems in the proper way and separate his Krishna consciousness from the difficulties. It's not that Prabhupada never cared. He always cared. And his caring was in the form of great compassion. It wasn't in the form of useless criticism. So yes, Prabhupada always had a problem in that sense. So he was concerned about the welfare of the devotees. But we have to learn how to distinguish between the difference. So what was your question? How to deal with those devotees or just reflecting on how to see... How to what, Prabhu? How to make things better without being caught in that trap of negativity. Right? You always have to see the good side and always appreciate. And one thing that helps me a lot is like a devotee might be feeling very, very strongly in a way that I'm strongly opposed. But one thing that we have in common, we feel very strongly about Prabhupada's movement. One devotee might feel very strongly in the opposite way, but the wonderful thing is that devotee is so dedicated and feels so strongly about Prabhupada's movement. How many people on this planet feel strongly about pushing on Krishna consciousness according to Prabhupada's desire? It's a wonderful thing. As long as we're not using Prabhupada's movement as an excuse for our envy and our fault finding, and not really doing anything to help, except talk negatively, which isn't a help at all. So there are many factors that come into play. It's considered to be an offense if we don't, or if we're not happy to see another devotee. It's an offense. It's Vaishnava Aparat. It's more subtle than the others, but it's still Vaishnava Aparat. So in terms of if you have a certain vision and you want to push it forward, all these things are required. in order to for us to maintain our Krishna consciousness while we're trying to do such things. And it's very purifying. It's very purifying to participate in Prabhupada's movement like that, because we learn these things. If we just reject and isolate ourselves, we're not helping Prabhupada's movement, and we're not becoming purified. We're just rejecting and avoiding. Sometimes we might not feel strong enough to fight on that particular battlefield. At the same time, we should appreciate very much those that are fighting on that battlefield, taking responsibility like that. Any comments on those points? We all deal with that in one way or another, right? Are there things about the temple that you would like to see different? Of course, right? Everybody feels like that. So the serenity prayer also comes into play. Part of that prayer, I've seen it written in different ways, but it's a prayer to the Lord to get the strength to change those things that you can. The ability to tolerate those things you can't change, and the intelligence to know the difference. Anything else? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.